Just in time for Christmas, it's our Lindsay Lohan is an amputee stripper episode. We discuss I Know Who Killed Me. Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm fill-in Elliot Kalin.
Yes, Elliot Kalin by day, a segment producer for The Daily Show and popular Metro columnist. Although, I guess by day right now, it's the writer's strike, so...
By day, I am a Guitar Hero guitarist and Wii Tennis Pro.
Yeah.
And popular columnist for
know
Metro.
What happens at the Daily Show offices during the strike? Apparently, it's a lot of video games.
A lot of video games, and we watched RoboCop and 310 to Yuma a couple days ago.
That's a sweet job.
It sounds rough, yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, we didn't watch RoboCop or 310 to Yuma. We watched I Know Who Killed Me, starring Lindsay Lohan. And what are you guys' feelings about Lindsay Lohan? Former America's Sweetheart, Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah, she's in this movie.
that's your first thought about her.
I think she plays two characters, or is that spoiling too much of the movie?
Well, does she play two
characters? Two characters, like in the true sense of the word character.
Two very different personalities. For instance, one kisses her boyfriend without biting his lip, and one kisses her boyfriend and bites his lip.
The first being Aubrey? Aubrey Fleming?
The nice character is named Aubrey Fleming, and the bad girl is named Dakota Moss.
I know. Yeah. Now that's good screenwriting, yeah. Those names right there.
Both names that are naturally occurring. Well, Aubrey Fleming, I think we were saying, you know, it's apparently Lindsay Lohan's playing sort of an 18th century gadabout, some sort of a wit.
Or a, you know, like a 19th century scientist, or, you know.
Right.
Discover the cure for cholera, you know, or something like that.
Yeah. So, but one of them is a local school child.
Very talented.
A pianist.
A pianist and
that shit comes to bite her in the ass, if I recall the actual movie. If I remember what happens in the movie, the fact that she's a good-ass pianist and doesn't actually respect her skills and doesn't want to do it anymore, I think ends up getting her shit fucked up and all melted off, right? Or chopped off?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
The lesson of the movie seems to be if you have a gift in music, you should go for it. Or else you might lose a hand and leg and be prematurely
buried. So that's
buried.
What you took away from this.
it's kind of what you have to take away from
don't
it.
Don't hide your light under a bushel. Exactly. It's the moral.
It's an inspiring tale for talented youngsters everywhere.
All right.
There's a place for you even if it's buried in a glass coffin.
But, well, that's the thing. Aubrey Fleming spends most of the movie buried in said glass coffin.
But you don't know that until
right.
The end.
We are to puzzle out this web. And decide whether...
Chinese puzzle box of a film.
Yeah.
With more questions than answers.
Is Lindsay Lohan actually two characters? Or does Dakota Moss, the stripper, or is she actually Aubrey Fleming?
What's weird is I think at one point they actually clarify, like the FBI agents actually find a story that Aubrey... I keep wanting to say Audrey because that's an actual name.
Yeah.
Aubrey wrote before she was kidnapped. About a person named Dakota who's a stripper.
But
there's an actual person named Dakota.
But it's established that being twins, as it turns out, I don't want to give too much away also, they of course have a telepathic connection to each other.
Yeah.
Now, my experience with twins is exclusively through like G.I. Joe with Tomax and Zamar, where if you punch one, the other one feels it and they finish each other's sentences. Elliot, you were saying you actually have a twin sister.
I have a twin sister myself.
And
my sister Stephanie.
Happens, right?
No, it's
so,
not.
Have you tried punching her and seeing whether you get
I've
hurt?
I've not tried punching her but I am basically a teetotaler. I don't drink. Mm-hmm. And she is a heavy drinker. And at one time...
I'm sure she would appreciate that
she
you're
would
revealing
love hearing
this on her podcast.
In her college days, she would often get, you know, she'd have to get her stomach pumped or something. She would be sick with drink, as they might say in like a Jack London novel. And I never felt any ill effects whatsoever. We have no link like that.
Huh.
So
maybe you're just immune to the effects of alcohol.
That could be it, too.
We should test that. Well, that'll be after the
that'll
podcast.
Be next week.
We will feed you shot after shot. And see what happens.
It's a great idea. But so they have a telepathic connection, but that's only kind of hinted at
right.
Through a very bizarre insert of an educational film starring radio's Art Bell, the Arizona paranormal radio host.
Yeah, I'm not actually as familiar with Art Bell, so can you expound?
Art Bell has been hosting a radio show for decades now. He's either in Arizona or New Mexico, and on the show they talk about the paranormal, government conspiracies, Area 51. I actually think he does it from Hawaii now. He got remarried at one point after his family was either kidnapped or murdered, I believe. And
they should make that movie.
He's a much more interesting character. But he's a real-life person. He's a radio show host who does this after-hours radio show where people call in and talk about seeing Sasquatch or being kidnapped by the government. And he shows up in this movie, not referred to by name, and talks about stigmata. And the film's understanding of stigmata is faulty.
Yeah, it's faulty. But first, let's point out that this movie is in the grand tradition of movies where computers are used, in that it has no understanding of the way computers are used. Lindsay Lohan, I mean, it has a little bit better understanding. Lindsay Lohan has had this unexplained bleeding.
It has
bleeding,
a better understanding.
So she types in unexplained bleeding, and she gets articles on stigmata, and then she clicks on like a picture of a stigmatic, and this video of Art Bell
pops
explaining
explaining the movie's idea of stigmata pops up, and like in a real internet pop-up would be, I guess, a porn ad. Or it has a better understanding of the internet than, say, the cartoon Freakazoid, in which you could be sucked into the internet and become a superhero.
Right.
Just a slightly better understanding.
Right. But stigmata.
Oh,
in
she
this
also
movie,
has a robot hand. We forgot to right. mention that.
Well, no, we'll circle back. Yeah. Believe me. The robot hand would be addressed.
Wait, she had a robot hand? What movie was I watching?
This is an a-religious sort of version of stigmata, because
yes.
She has unexplained bleeding from her hand, but it's not the wounds of Christ. It's the fact that her twin sister has had her hand chopped off.
Their theory of stigmata seems to be that, say, the holy monks who had stigmata must have had identical twins they didn't know about somewhere on Earth being poked in the palm at that moment.
So what they're saying is
possibly by a member of G.I. Joe.
That Jesus had a twin.
Yes.
And twin
Jesus
is everyone who's had stigmata through the ages.
Let me correct you right there, Dan. I'm not actually Christian. But Jesus, his stigmata was caused by a nail through the palm.
Oh, right.
It's the wounds of Christ who got them in a very logical way. He was
somehow
crucified.
I forgot the entire Easter story. I don't know how that's possible.
You forgot the point of Jesus' life. Oh, Lindsay Lohan.
Son of a minister.
I'm kind of interested that you pronounce it Lindsay Lohan and not Lindsay Lohan, as I am used
to. I say Lohan, yeah. Yeah, that's weird, Dan.
I'm more stylish than you guys.
No, okay. Yeah, obviously.
You are the only one wearing a button-down shirt in the room, so.
Yeah, well, that was for work. But Lindsay Lohan, I thought, you know, I was a big fan circa Mean Girls, you know. Mm-hmm. I thought, oh, she's a talented young
actress. She looked
actress,
pretty good in that, yeah.
And she was cute.
Mm-hmm.
She was
sure.
cute back then, and now she's become all sort of orange.
She's gotten very oily and greasy.
She's gotten oily and orange.
Some of that, I think, rubbed off from making out with Bruce Willis, but otherwise, who knows, drinking in general.
Whoa. In what kind?
You know, she was seen with Bruce Willis in a number of nightclubs for a time.
Really?
Making out, yeah. The same way, like, they had kind of a Lance Armstrong, Ashley Olsen relationship.
Why do I find that much more alarming than Demi Moore and Ashton Kutcher?
Because I think it's a double, because Bruce Willis, I think, is no Demi Moore. Let's start with that.
Okay. Do you think he took her home and played a lot of harmonica to her?
Probably. I have to assume that his Bruno personality made an appearance. And in his own way, Bruce Willis and Bruno are not too different from the Aubrey Dakota split that we see here. The
right.
good and the bad, if
right.
you will.
Bruce
Do you
Willis...
think her attraction was based on, I don't know, a number of viewings of Color of Night? Or
or Hudson Hawk, perhaps.
Yeah, she's like, I want to get a piece of that.
Yes. When she was growing up as a child actress, her family had HBO. She was 9 years old, and she stumbled upon Color of Night.
The minute
said,
she saw Bruce Willis's penis in that swimming pool,
I want a bite. I want a piece.
That was the awakening. The awakening of Lindsay.
Yep. It's like that scene in Labyrinth.
You mean the whole movie Labyrinth? Yeah.
No, that scene in Labyrinth where she goes to the masquerade ball and...
Oh, I thought you meant the scene. Every scene when David Bowie's crotch is so prominently.
Oh, that's pretty cool too.
That's kind of the Princess Leia bikini for girls.
Yeah. Oh, that's the best.
I never thought of that.
That's the best analogy I've heard.
That's pretty good.
Oh.
Just this moment when suddenly, as a young child, you're like, "Oh, sex! Genitals!" you know.
I don't know. For me, it was Chitara from Thundercats. There's an episode where she's naked the whole time.
Yeah, they just didn't paint her right.
Oh my
god. Yeah.
And also, and I can't. And also, the end of Just One of the Guys was very really big.
Yeah. Oh fuck yes.
Yeah.
I want to watch that. Can we watch that after this?
I would go with Sheena.
I own it.
Sheena had a long nude scene, and that was always being played on HBO during the day because it was inexplicably rated PG, despite being filled with nudity. And my cartoon version, as yours would be, Scarlet from G.I. Joe.
For me, it's not Scarlet, dude. It's fucking Baroness. Baroness is the hottest Russian chick in the world. Wait, she was Russian. I can't remember.
I mean, we've gotten far afield other than the fact that there's not a large amount of sex in this movie, but, like, I was puzzling over whether you would count this as an erotic thriller or
there are many stripping scenes. Yeah. With no stripping actually being done.
As I was saying when we were watching the movie, I don't mean to be a douchebag or anything, but I get really upset when I see movies with strip club scenes that are, like, filmed by people who have never clearly been in a strip club. Because, obviously, yeah, they're not sexy or anything. But, for one, the stripper should be getting naked.
Yeah.
And the waitresses should not be naked, because the stripper wouldn't be getting any money then. Well, the guys would be like, hey, there's a naked person. Let's get her money instead.
That's the thing that irritates me, and I hope not from, like, just, like, a jerk guy sort of perspective. But I find it very strange when a big actress signs onto a role where, like, the role is clearly defined as, like, all right, you're a stripper. And then, like, all right, okay, I'll be a stripper. But I'll be a stripper who constantly wears a bra and panties.
Well, that was one of my problems with Sin City, with Jessica Alba's character, was that there's plenty of nudity in that film, and her character of Nancy in the Sin City comics is completely topless almost all the time. And is a stripper, and she's the stripper that everyone in Basin City is so hot for. And then she strips and she dances, but she's never takes her clothes off and isn't particularly provocative in her dancing.
Right, and this isn't necessarily like a plea for more nudity, although like
it is.
Well, all right,
yeah.
I'm not asking Lindsay Lohan. I'm not like expecting her to be like flashing me her butthole
but also,
or something.
The fact that there is a sex scene where she keeps her bra on in the film, and she's
for half of it.
That's right. But
we got side boob after.
But
that.
But she's supposed to be a bad girl, and she doesn't. You know, and this seems
right. Well, my thing is like, of course, you know, it would be nice to see more naked, attractive people in movies. Like, that's part of the reason why you watch movies.
As opposed to,
like,
all these Walter Matthau movies. Exactly.
Oh, the Walter Matthau softcore porn. It's terrible. But no, but if you're going to make this, a movie...
Zolman King directed that one.
All this, you know, James Earl Jones film, the name of the movie that I've been seeing.
That was the erotic couple. Who's
the erotic couple.
This is a terrible, terrible film. Cemented my heterosexuality. But no, but it's just like, if you're gonna make a movie where that's like a major component of it, it just seems very strange.
Yes,
you know, you can tell, okay, there's a no nudity clause in my contract. Like, that's what you think when you watch the film.
Well, they want to create this aura of sexual perversity, but they're afraid they can't go that distance.
Right, and all I'm thinking of is like, why aren't these patrons demanding their money back?
patrons seem to be loving the show. That's the thing.
It's like a flash dance thing.
Can't get enough of this show.
And they all seem to be like kind of old guys that are all like licking their lips creepily.
Yeah.
Like the mental apparition in High Tension. Like really weirdos.
Or like Udo Kier in any movie.
Yeah. Okay, fine. I'll
Well, it's not.
So they look weirdly European.
Yeah,
too?
In some way. They had kind of a seedy European.
Bulgy
quality,
eyes, sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, let's not dwell on this too much, because I believe that we teased a robot hand earlier
yes,
in the show.
Yes, and we didn't even get to the blue.
And
the color
audience.
Blue,
but... Yeah, there's two things.
I imagine that the audience heard robot hand.
And just skipping
15 minutes ago.
Skipping ahead every minute to see if we're talking about a robot hand, and then skipping ahead again.
Yeah, it's not even really addressed that much in the movie after it happens, but the moment I realized that I really was enjoying the craziness of the movie is when Crabman, the guy who plays Crabman on My Name is Earl, shows up as Lindsay Lohan's doctor.
Very briefly.
And installs a robot hand.
Because she's, again, missing a hand. He gives her a robot hand that attaches to her stump with a magnet. That's the thing. There's no visible support mechanism holding it to her arm. There's no power source.
Right.
It's like Tesla invented this hand for her, and it's been kept around. And they give her a lifelike skin to wear over it, and it's basically just an elbow-length rubber latex glove. It's the worst-looking prosthetic hand in the world. But it's a robot hand that she later uses to fight you know, the killer in the movie.
Yeah, I guess they figured, they're like, all right, the screenwriter's like, okay, there's this ending of this movie where Lindsay Lohan takes on the bad guy, and it's just not going to be plausible that this young woman is taking on this killer unless I give her some sort of weapon, like a robot hand.
Yep, that's what I usually go to.
I saw it the other way. It was the one instance in the thing where he goes, what would Chekhov do? You know, Chekhov wouldn't give a... You know, if you have a robot hand in the first act, it better crush somebody's arm in the third act. That's what Anton Chekhov would think about this.
Yeah. Anton Chekhov's I Know Who Killed Me.
Well, the thing is that, like...
be so more, although Anton Chekhov's I Know Who Killed Me would be so much better than this, because there's almost no exposition in this film at times. You're really puzzling your way through it, whereas Chekhov's plays are nothing but exposition. So I wish he had been brought in to maybe doctor up the script a little bit.
What I really liked about the robot hand is that so often in movies, specifically like thrillers and stuff, you're confronted with a moment where you're like... where you as a viewer are kind of pulled out of the movie because you're like, wait, this is like the modern day. Like, people should be able to look shit up on the internet or use a cell phone. Why aren't they doing that? Well, like, if she just ran around without a hand the whole time, be like, where's the robot hand? I saw three people with robot hands on the subway today. Where the fuck's the robot hand? I don't believe this for an instant.
Yeah. She's going to have to fight Darth Vader later
without
a robot hand.
I don't believe this.
And you mentioned the color scheme, and I think that you should say a little bit about that.
What color scheme? I think Elliot mentioned it.
Well, there's a heavy use of the color blue in every single frame of the film, including the dissolves between scenes, and it's almost as if the movie is trying to tell us that blue is a scary color, or... What were you guys' takes on that?
I think somebody watched the commentary track on The Sixth Sense, and they're like, yeah, the color whatever the fuck indicates he's a ghost. So yeah. Like, oh my god, if we make everything blue, it'll make people realize that our movie's a good movie.
But there are blue roses, blue glass, the killer dresses in blue, there's just blue light everywhere,
every once in a while the whole screen will just fade to blue.
Yeah, it will just fade to blue and then back again.
All the serial killers weaponry is made out of blue glass. Yeah,
apparently he has a glazier-y or a glass-blowing kit, you know, in his
basement. It's not actually... I thought it was a brick oven pizza-making thing, but it's actually a glass-blowing...
It's one of those things you have to wonder, like, who built this house that it has this huge glass-blowing operation in the basement, and how come nobody knows this?
Well, again, we come back to the evidence dungeon. I mean,
everyone knows how much I love an evidence dungeon. And, you know, I don't really think this is a true evidence dungeon, because there's no, like, information as to why he does things, other than this weird collection of, fake limbs
and shit. Of mannequin limbs, which was never explained.
I think it qualifies in that it's another example of a killer in a movie having... this very equipped basement. Like, this basically, like...
Sure.
This, you know, the basement may have, like, dirt floors, but it also has, as you say, a big fire for making glass weaponry, and it has a bunch of prosthetic limbs hanging from the ceiling. Which, by the way, I don't really get... I guess he's been doing this a while, you know, cutting women's limbs off, but then why does he have prosthetic limbs?
But they also only mention one other victim.
Right.
So maybe he's just started out... I mean, my theory is that they stole it from the movie Killer's Kiss. But the climax takes place in a mannequin warehouse.
Yeah, I've never seen this movie.
Right.
It's not very good, except the ending. The killer, by the way, not giving away anything, makes two appearances in the film. One early on, and then at the end, when it's revealed he's the killer.
Right.
And he is, even though he only appears twice, if I remember it correctly, he was instantly recognizable as the killer.
What about you, at
in
least?
His first appearance. Well, he's a creepy guy.
You called it.
He's really creepy, and he has a huge blue ring. And it's like, all right, he looks like, you know, a loan shark, or somebody who owes money to a loan shark.
Right.
He's wearing sunglasses indoors. Well, always a fucking negative sign.
Well, if you were going to pause the movie 20 minutes in, and you were playing, like, so parlor game, where you're just... you know, you were watching it with your friends, you'd all gotten together to watch I Know Who Killed Me. Say there's 10 people in the room, you know, just really enjoying the latest Lindsay Lohan joint. And you pause it 20 minutes in, and you say to yourself, okay, everyone, who's the most alarming character we've encountered thus far? You would probably guess who the killer is.
I'd say you'd guess either him or Crazy Gardner, who disappears from the film.
Entirely.
There's a gardener who makes a very blatant sexual come on to Lindsay Lohan that involves taking his shirt off and then fondling a branch, I guess.
Yes, with a scorpion tattoo on his nipple.
Scorpion tattoo.
Yeah, that was a strange choice also on the part of either the art director or the actor in real life who got a scorpion tattooed on his nipple.
But he was also fondling the
we
branch.
We can find out in the commentary track.
As if he was giving the branch a hand job.
Yeah.
Which I don't know, it doesn't seem like the way to come on to a woman.
Frankly, if I'm ever in a situation where I am in, like, the same area as Lindsay Lohan, I will probably do the same thing with a branch. I'm not going to lie, you know.
But, oh, you were going to say something earlier that I interrupted you about.
I was going to say something about, the thing about the evidence dungeon, specifically this one, is that it makes me think, like, every time I go into my apartment now, I look around and I'm like, okay, if some, like, victim was in here, would they immediately think that I'm a murderer? Like, is all, like, does it seem like a murderer's lair? Is
right.
there... Should that mannequin be up with her face?
Like, you created a collage of, like, shots taken from across the street of one woman doing
on the lawn,
various
yeah.
things.
Yeah, a lot of pictures, of, like, stolen, like ripped out of porno magazines right. of chicks spreading their vaginas with their eyeballs chopped out.
Is
like,
is there release papers from an asylum with your name on it?
That's a perfect one, like, in memory. Yeah, they totally have that in memory.
Yeah.
Like, a signed confession note by me.
Yes.
A murder checklist.
Yeah, Liz,
a picture of me
people
like
to kill with your name unchecked.
Wait, you put your own name on the people to kill Liz? But I just have to remember never to check that because I'm bound by this list.
A list of potential weaknesses.
I got my pronouns mixed up. I meant the name of the victim. List of potential weaknesses. Note to self: don't let victims see my back. It's bad. I might get hit in it.
Don't leave glass axes lying around where they can chop my arm off easily.
Speaking of glass axes chopping arms off, here was a problem I had: was that Lindsay Lohan?
Wait, what problem is this?
Lindsay Lohan. Okay, she's in the dungeon. The killer sticks his arm around the door, and she has found one of his glass axes. He's carelessly left it on the floor, not put it away in his axe holder.
It seems like you would step on a glass axe and it would shatter
yes,
if you did that.
It's made of glass, and even if it's maybe, let's say, the web metal-enforced glass that you see in schools in their doors, because otherwise you might break them, as I did once, by throwing a lock through it. But even if it was that kind of glass, it would be hard, I would think, to cut straight through a person's wrist, which Lindsay Lohan manages to do when the hand goes around the door. Keep in mind, I assume this is a human with a skeleton made of bone, and I've never heard of glass cutting through bone. But apparently,
we have no reason not to assume that he has bones.
That's
and
true.
Things like that.
I have no reason to assume that he's not a magic, you know, demon or something, or made of clay or a golem, you know.
Yep, he's probably golem.
His bone may have been weakened from all the dry ice he's been applying to various women to
that's
cut
okay,
their
that's,
off.
That's what, I'm glad you brought that up, Dan, because I actually thought that was kind of cool, that weird, like, torture method of him, like vice clamping dry ice to somebody's hand to, like,
and
freeze the shit out of it.
Peeling it off.
Yeah, that's pretty gross. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, I guess. It's a little saw. I don't
Well, I didn't go into
like,
the scene
weird.
Like, what cool way is he going to use to torture this bitch?
Just the fact that he didn't, like, stab her right there, for instance. That was, yeah, just that they put any thought in the way he torches or kills her.
I see. It's two against one, dude.
All right. I guess I'm wrong, man.
That's okay.
You're not wrong. Let's just say that you didn't think through it fully.
Now, I want to talk about the ending to this movie. Now, I thought that this movie
Which
was...
ending?
Yeah,
well,
that's a good point.
There's
two.
The theatrical ending, and then we'll talk about the alternate ending.
Okay.
Theatrical. This movie was released in theaters. This is always what I wonder when I watch these, because I watch bad movies at home. The movie was released in theaters, and someone, I'm thinking at least 1,000 people, paid anywhere from $8.50 to $11 to see this film. And how did they feel? Did they want to punch somebody? Did they break something on the way out?
What's more, I think that this movie was supposed to be like Lindsay Lohan's
her maturation.
Like, yeah, this was going to be her transitional film from your Freaky Fridays and your Confessions of a High School Drama Queen.
Yep.
To you know, adult pictures. Not adult pictures.
But no,
that
fucking wish that
that will, that will occur later down the line in her career. But
this was her growing up film. That was going to show that she was an adult and an adult actress, a grown-up actress who could make like a suspense thriller or
an adult thriller.
The kind
adult thriller, right?
An erotic thriller.
But it was you had the same. It felt even though she was playing a high school student, it still felt like a kid playing an adult in the same way that say Kate Bosworth in Superman Returns feels like a high school student pretending to be
a high school production of Superman the movie.
Well, the Superman it feels like it's the character from Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead who can walk into a fashion company.
And why, by the way, guys,
a children's clothing manufacturer.
I have a favor to ask you guys. Don't tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead because she's gonna be pissed.
If she knew who killed me, then she would. She does say the phrase "I know who killed me" at some point in the movie, which is great.
Yeah, I think that every movie, by the way, should end with the title.
Well, you had an interesting suggestion for the opening.
We didn't watch the alternate opening, by the way, guys. And I'm the way I'm imagining it is that it opens. You know, it's a blue screen.
Great.
And you hear a heartbeat on one of those EKG. EKG. I thought that was the thing the Ghostbusters use.
I think they call it that also.
Okay. So the EKG thing, you know, beep, 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 beep. And then all of a sudden, like, the blue fades to her face in a hospital bed with, like, tubes and shit stuck in
her.
Eyes closed, asleep, like in a coma. Her eyes open all of a sudden. She sits up. And she looks right at the camera and goes, "I know who killed me." And then the words go across the screen. You got a guitar riff. Dun-dun. And then, you know, you got like a cool opening montage of her like running around from like killers. It's awesome.
I would say just straight titles. I know who killed me. Slip, like slam cut. Strip, like MGM's 360 Productions presents. Or TriStar.
It was TriStar.
TriStar presents, "I know who killed me." Dun 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 dun. And then, you know, the scene starts up again.
You get, a Bernard Herrmann score.
I wish Bernard Herrmann could and Saul Bass could do every title sequence for every movie, but...
That would have improved this movie greatly.
The movie didn't open like that. But the alternate ending you were talking about.
Well, no, the original ending. So, Lindsay Lohan figures out that that her mom's actual child died soon after her mom gave birth. And she was purchased from the crack. She's like a crack baby.
Yeah.
Purchased from some woman
who had twins.
Who had twins.
Oh, no. She was given. $11 was mailed to her every month, I guess, by the father. That was established.
Oh.
The price for a baby is $11 a month.
What the fuck? She was purchased as a.
As a replacement baby. Oh, and there was a great story from the mother talking to Lindsay Lohan when, I guess she always thought it was her biological daughter, mm-hmm. talking about how in the womb she always kicked, always kicking. And then she says to her, "You're going to kick through this problem just like you kicked back then." And it's this amazing visual image of Lindsay Lohan literally kicking a wall down or something like
that. Sure, with her bionic leg.
With her bionic leg. She has a robot leg too, by the way.
Yeah. But so anyway, she discovers that she was a twin. And she realizes, okay, what's going on is this: my twin sister has been kidnapped, and I'm having this like stigmata because I'm experiencing what she's experiencing. And she goes to the
and I'm a stripper,
right?
I'm a stripper, and she's a goody two shoes,
right? So they actually
it's like Angel, that movie where she's a stripper by day, schoolgirl by night. Wait, no, fuck that one up. She's a schoolgirl by day and a prostitute by night.
Because if she was a prostitute by day and a schoolgirl by night,
night school.
Yeah,
that's just the way strippers are. They're going to school by night to better themselves.
In some ways, that's the Maggie Gyllenhaal movie Cherry Baby about an ex-con trying to better herself.
Yeah, but the point is.
Oh, which also there's a movie, by the way, that says why there should be less nudity sometimes in films.
Because not sexy nudity.
Cherry Baby is a movie that will make you, if you're a heterosexual male or a homosexual woman, ashamed of ever having been aroused by the sight of a naked woman.
Right.
The nudity in it is just so depressing and so, like...
What is it, like in a prison or something?
It's just in bad context of, like, her, like, as this down-on-her-luck ex-con, like, having sex with guys for jobs in basements, you know? And
yeah.
Everyone's all filthy, and it's just very, very
and
sad.
Speaking as a guy who, like, really likes Maggie Gyllenhaal and, like, thinks she's a good actress and, like, thinks she's very attractive, like, it's very unpleasant.
I'm not sold on this. I'm probably going to have to watch it.
Rent Cherry Baby and then try to masturbate to it, and you won't be able to.
I bet I could. It's a contest.
But anyway... So she rushes, she kills the guy, she kills the bad guy.
Sure.
She goes to dig up her sister.
With a glass, cuts his hand off with a glass knife,
yeah.
Then stabs him in the crotch and the neck, which was kind of neat.
She digs up her sister in a glass coffin. And by the way, I don't think that the movie ever explains the whole glass thing.
He just likes glass and the color blue. That's all you need to know.
I guess that's it. But,
they never even explain why he's a killer. He's just a crazy guy.
Well, I like
they don't need to, dude.
Okay.
Like in the real world, do you think, like, I don't know, all the crazy killers explain why they're killers before they get killed with a glass knife to the neck?
No, but in the real world, you don't have, say, like, identical twins who are separated at birth who have telepathic powers, and
one of them is caught by... Dude, that shit's on the internet.
That's true. Art Bell did do that movie about it on the internet, yeah.
But the point, maybe the reason why everything's blue is because Aubrey is looking through her blue-glassed coffin.
It still doesn't explain whether her boyfriend gives her blue roses or there's a blue...
It doesn't explain it at all.
There's an owl.
Has blue balls for most of the movie.
Yeah, I have to assume. Go!
We got to the end of the movie and I was like, okay, what's going on here? I know what's going on.
I know who killed me.
What's happening is that none of this is real. This is like Aubrey's fantasy as she lies dying. This is her... It's going to be one of these twists where like, oh, this is her mind's way of dealing with the pain. And she's going to invent this sister who's going to save her and all this stuff. And part of the reason I thought this is that there were inexplicably a bunch of owls throughout the movie. And I thought, oh, okay, it's an occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge. This is their, like, the movie's clumsy attempt at a literary reference. But then we find out that, worse than that, the real alternate ending of the movie is...
ending.
Which test audiences did not like, so it was the original ending.
Right, the original ending was... We discover at the end that this is all a story that Aubrey has been writing, because we see that she's a writer. And at the end, she types the end of it.
And it ends, and it doesn't even have her, it ends, it's a long shot of her typing, and you see the closet door behind her swing open by itself, and you're like, oh, and the killer jumps out and kills her while she's finishing the story. No, I guess it was just wind in the room.
I like to think that's her alternate identity, Dakota Moss, leaving, traveling through
the ether.
I don't know, it's bullshit.
But there's just this look on her face like, huh, that was a good story.
This is like, according to Wikipedia says, oh, this alternate ending was cut because test audiences found it too predictable. Rather than, this alternate ending was cut because test audiences thought it was a big fuck you.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, okay. Before we go quite into the fuck you of it, I'm going to do something that I did when we were watching Saw 3, and that's I'm going to play the role of Aubrey Fleming, okay? I'm trapped in this glass
coffin.
Which
I think you could do better than Lindsay Lohan.
I appreciate that, Elliot. Now, okay, I imagine, like, okay, I'm getting into character. My hand's been chopped off. My foot's been chopped off. I'm in a weird glass coffin with a weird, like, 19th century milkmaid's dress on with a fucking veil over my face. I've been buried alive. Oh, shit, I'm gonna die. Weird. Oh, man, I'm running out of air. Oh, wait, is that light I see? Like, moonlight? Oh, somebody's, you know, digging me out of my coffin. Oh, my God, the thing's open. Somebody let me out with their robot hand. Who is it? Oh my God, it's my fucking twin. Like, somebody looks exactly like me. That's my twin. How am I going to respond? I'm going to smile quietly and allow her to help me out and then snuggle up to me, and that's the end of the fucking movie.
I would say it had... She, because they're telepathic links, she has been writing the story of Dakota Moss as part of her English thing, so maybe she thought her... Like, it was a... like the Twilight Zone episode where the guy can write something and it comes to life and he creates his own. Turns out his wife was in a figment. Like she goes, oh, my character came to life and saved me, you know, or something. Or maybe she's lost a lot of oxygen. Maybe she thinks she's just dreaming.
You're saying that she thinks it's like that that edition of Amazing Stories where they draw the cartoon
wheel on the plane.
On the plane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's true. It was strange that she was saved by someone who looks exactly like her, and her reaction wasn't, huh? Instead it was...
Like you was spit taking
Excuse me while I drink this so I can
drink some of this milk. It looks good on camera.
Instead her reaction was, oh, yeah, thank you. Like, it's good to see you.
I love myself. But myself saved me.
But there seems to be this understanding that she had a connection and knew Dakota existed.
I didn't have that understanding.
You know? Well, I mean, I have this understanding now talking to you about
sure.
it. At the time, I was like, this is a shitty movie. That was the understanding I had.
All right. Well, we're having so much fun that this is going to end up being one of the longest podcasts ever. So I'm going to encourage us to move on to...
No, Dan, let's keep going. I think we can get this podcast going all night.
Let's talk about fuck you endings. What a fucking bullshit ending.
Actually, I do want to talk about that a little bit.
Oh, Okay, what? Let's talk about that, Dan. What are your thoughts?
Really, if it had ended with the original ending where it's just something that she wrote, I can't imagine anything more frustrating than that.
Yes.
Being like, okay, this fictional character also wrote a work of fiction, but you had no way of knowing that this was a second layer of fiction at any point, so anything could happen, and nothing that happened made any difference.
But it was more of a fuck you ending than if it turned out it was all a dream.
Or John Cusack's head.
Or we were saying while we were watching it, like the film Identity, in which it turns out everything is happening inside John Cusack's head because he's crazy. Although, actually, John Cusack is one of the personalities. He's not the actor plays the crazy guy.
That's that dude with that fucking wonky eye, right?
Yeah, yeah, he's all bald.
Pruitt Taylor Vince.
Thank you, IMDb. But all these characters are just personalities fighting it out in his head. That's kind of a fuck you twist, and it's really stupid. But it's much smarter than this would be if it was like, oh, remember the person we invented? Well, they wrote the story you watched, and it never happened. And that's why there's so many holes.
Got a name. She got a name, if it matters.
That'd be great. Actually, it would be great if it paused on her face and then said, Aubrey Fleming received an A+ for the paper. She went on to Yale University or something like
that. Just like the ending of fucking Unbreakable or something.
Yeah, exactly.
She's now the famous thriller author Aubrey Fleming.
Well, it's like one of those...
You may remember her from such books as I Know Who Killed Me. The person who killed me is you.
And
who killed me?
I still know who killed me.
She later went on to write cool sexy novels under the name Dakota Moss. Dun, dun, dun.
But it's almost like... The ending would have been like her mother walking up to her and being like, oh, Aubrey, you finished your book? Mom, call me by my pen name. Mary Higgins Clark. Like, one of those things where the twist is that she was a famous person as a child. You know, that would have been a more fulfilling ending. But instead, no.
Pretty great, actually.
Lives of the pulp novelists.
Yeah.
And then what? Her mom's like, who's going to play the actress in your movie? And she's like, Ashley Judd, and Morgan Freeman's going to play Dad. It's going to be great.
The next scene is her on the set of Kiss the Girl. Although that's actually a James Patterson book, I think.
That's where it falls apart.
That's where our story falls apart. Oh.
It doesn't matter. The audiences don't actually give a shit.
James Patterson, who actually looks a lot like Art Bell, when it comes down to
it. All comes full circle. Speaking of which, time to... close up the circle that is this segment of the show with our final judgments on I Know Who Killed Me. And as always, the categories are, is this a movie that you would not recommend to anyone? A movie that you thought was enjoyable because it was bad? A funny movie? Or is this a movie that you actually kind of liked? So, Elliot, why don't you go first?
I would say that this is a bad movie that I would not recommend.
Yeah.
It's kind of a mess, and it's almost like, even to make fun of a movie, you kind of have to have some understanding of what's going on, and it takes so long to figure out what's happening in this movie. There's so many characters who appear and then disappear. The FBI agents who are looking into the crime, the gardener, you know, like, the actual killer who disappears into the last scene of the movie, you know. Coming from someone who saw Southland Tales last week, this is a mess of a movie that doesn't come together. So I would say don't recommend, although I had fun watching it, but I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah,
I'm going to say that this movie totally sucked and nobody should ever have to see it. There's not nearly enough nudity to make this movie worthwhile. Although, the fact that a killer runs around with fucking blue glass weaponry actually makes it kind of interesting.
I'm actually surprised, because I think that this movie is a good, bad movie. Like, it is so
weird.
Wait,
is this a 1, 2, or 3? Which one is this?
This is number 2.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a number 2, all right. Woo! Piece of shit. Anyway, you were saying Mr. McCoy.
The most childish joke in a long stream of childish jokes on the Flophouse.
If I had ended it with a fart noise, then it would be the most childish joke.
No, because it's like, it really, like, it is so strange. It's like a junior version of... like Blue Velvet or something. It is like someone saw a bunch of David Lynch movies and was like, I'm going to make one with Lindsay Lohan. And it's going to be kind of like a Lindsay Lohan movie. But it's also going to have the weird ass, just, you know, disjointed quality of a Lynch film. I mean, not good like a Lynch film, but if seeing a sort of junior varsity David Lynch movie with Lindsay Lohan sounds amusing to you, I would say go watch this movie.
Or it almost feels like a bad Dario Argento movie at times. Yeah. Like, very bold colors, and the plot makes no sense.
Yeah. So, like, a normal Dario Argento
movie. Yeah, so, like, all of the
Dario. If it was a Dario Argento movie, I would not be recommending it to anyone. I find his popularity inexplicable.
But this was one of those confusing, poorly explained movies that if it was in French or Italian, right. I feel like people would be like, oh, this is an intriguing enigma of a film, when really it's just bad screenwriting.
Look
all
at all
the way
that
through.
Blue.
Yeah, exactly. This blue is a stout. Ooh, it's so
the colors
bold.
Are rich.
Rich colors.
That's all we like in movies. Oh, the colors.
It's when, you know, characters appear and leave as if in some sort of phantasmagoric dream. A stream of consciousness thriller, you know, that kind of thing. But it's just bad. If it was in another language, that might have been hidden.
Might have saved it, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so two total non-recommendations and one qualified bad movie recommendation. So let's move on to actual recommendations to prove that we're not bastards who can find no joy in life at all. Are there any movies that we want to recommend to people? Are you going to raise your hands, maybe?
I mean, should we all recommend one? Or I don't know if anyone
has. That's probably best.
Okay, yeah. I went first last time, so I probably shouldn't go
sure.
first.
Okay, I'm going to take the bull by the horns, because I actually think I have a recommendation. Actually, it's only a kind of recommendation, but it was pretty good. I saw Murder Party recently, which I think is filmed in New York or Brooklyn or something.
Not a lot of movies are filmed in New York or Brooklyn, so that's kind of a rare thing.
Don't be an asshole, dude.
It's possibly one of the least set movie set cities in the world, so... Anyway,
I was talking. No, do you want to finish my segment?
Oh, right.
Basically, it's about a guy who happens to, you know, he manages to find this Halloween party invitation, and he's this totally lonely guy. So, and he has nothing to do on Halloween, so he ends up going to this party, and it turns out to be a party thrown by a bunch of art students who invited random people to this party so that they can murder them and turn them into, like, an art piece. So it's kind of like a weird, like, I don't know, slasher movie meets The Breakfast Club or something. And if anything, it's worth watching because of this awesome cardboard knight costume this guy makes that's really hilarious and cool. So, Murder Party, it's at least worth watching. It's pretty gory.
I'll recommend, I saw The Bedroom Window, which is one of Curtis Hanson's earliest directorial, one of his earliest films as a director. He also... wrote it. I think it's an adaptation of a book. I'm not sure about that, but I'm going to go out on a limb here and say it might be the best Steve Guttenberg film. I know there's a lot of competition for that
title. You know what I'm going to argue.
What's that? Don't Tell Her It's Me?
Yeah.
A.K.A. The... Boyfriend School?
Yeah, that movie rocks.
Oh, I was going to say Zeus and Roxanne. Proved a dog could love a
I'm
seal.
I'm sorry, but Zeus and Roxanne doesn't have... Steve Guttenberg pretending to be a New Zealand Lothario.
Lobo Moringa.
With Shelley Long, too.
And that Mitch is a, Amick and Kyle MacLachlan.
That
and
is
Jamie Gertz.
That is a pretty good movie. That is a... Fuck it. If someone wants to see a bad movie that they'll have a fun time watching, go out and watch Don't Tell Her It's Me. But, but if you want to see a movie that's actually kind of good, that stars Steve Guttenberg. Like, maybe like 1981 when they thought that Steve Guttenberg and Isabel Huppert would be a believable pair. It's a movie about, you know, a guy, like, a guy's having an affair with his boss's wife, and, you know, like, they just had sex, and Steve Guttenberg's out of the room, and the woman hears another woman being assaulted downstairs. Elizabeth McGovern is getting attacked, and the killer gets frightened away, but he's witnessed by Isabel Huppert. But because they're having an affair, she doesn't want to come forward and point the finger at the actual killer. So Steve Guttenberg's character says, no, it's all right. I will pretend to be the eyewitness. I will take your information and I'll take it to the police. And predictably, everything goes wrong in a very Hitchcockian thriller fashion. And, you know, for a movie... Again, starring Steve Guttenberg, a nice forgotten thriller of the early 80s.
Hey, I don't know when I'll be back, so if I can make two quick recommendations.
Sure.
These are both for older movies. One is the Japanese horror film Gokei Blob from Hell, which I don't know if anyone's seen, but it's about a plane crashes, and it turns out that there's an alien blob that is taking over people's bodies and turning them into vampire type things, and it has possibly the bleakest ending that I may have ever seen in a movie, and it's just, and there are some great scenes where people's heads crack open and the blob crawls out, but it's pretty good. And the other one is a classier movie from the 30s is I'm a Fugitive from a Chain Gang with Paul Muni, which I watched recently for the first time, and which is a really gritty, like, kind of tense, frightening movie at times. And there's a scene where when he escapes from the chain gang and becomes the titular fugitive, it's a genuinely, like, super tense scene where he's running away from these guards and you're like, hurry up, they're gonna catch you, like, what are you doing? That kind of a scene. So
yeah.
The plot does hinge on him making possibly the dumbest choice that a character could ever make, though, which is to I'll give it away, I don't care. To trust the, I think Georgia penal system, that they'll keep their word and let him out after 90 days if he returns to the chain gang, which, of course, once he does, they refuse to do. So,
right. Yeah, that's a pretty great movie.
It's pretty good.
So, everyone being the two of you and me.
Sure.
We had a good time tonight.
We had some laughs.
But everything needs to come to an end. We don't really know what movie we're going to do next, I guess. Or when it's going to come out, because I think that this is going to come out, and then there's going to be the holidays.
Oh, yeah.
So a special holiday edition.
Well, probably maybe a little Christmas delay. And maybe the new year before there's a new episode. I mean, there probably will be the new year before there's a new episode, but yeah, there may probably only be one in January. I'm not sure how that's going to work out. However, I want to remind everyone, as always, that the website is theflophousepodcast.blogspot.com. And the email address is theflophousepodcast@gmail.com. So if you want to check out show notes or write us a review, which helps us get new listeners, or just write us, that's how you do it. Pretty nerdy.
Sounds like good shit.
So,
I guess we can sign off. You got to go to your Flophouse podcast, because if not, I think it's a porno site, right?
Yeah, if you just do theflophouse.blogspot.com, it's like this weird half blog, half like, I'm going to direct you to porno site.
It sounds like such a disappointing name for a porno site.
It's yeah. Like
the most flaccidest porn on the web. The Flop House.
The drunkest girls you can imagine lying on dirty cots.
These guys just can't get it up. The Flop House. You know.
Well, that was our original slogan. So, as always, we're sort of petering out with a whimper. So, I suppose we should sign off, huh?
Yeah, why not? I want to see that UA Bowl movie there really bad.
All right, well, we may see that UA
Bowl
movie.
We can do a special in theaters edition.
Flophouse in the aisles.
I think it's showing up in theaters. Oh!
All right.
Oh, check out this one with the big ideas.
Hey, I don't know.
I guess I'll put the extra money into actually seeing a bad movie in the theater.
Dude, I'll even buy the tickets.
Oh!
Because I totally want to see that
Daddy Warbucks. All right, well, in that case, maybe we'll talk about that next time. And I'll sign off. My name is Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
Elliot Kalin.
Good night.
Bye. Okay, cool. they're gone, right? Okay, good. I fucking hated those guys.
Dan, every time I look at this pot holder, I think it's a piece of monster.
That's just your...
That's just my Jewish instincts coming out.
That's weird. Every time I
like
a piece of
monster,
I think it's
a monster.
Yeah,
whatever that is.
I was walking with my friend Frank last night, and he got like a free menorah from a...
Yeah,
like
I dodged one of those.
I was like, man, the Jews are on point this holiday season. I don't get like free Advent calendars being handed.